My general expression is against the existence of poltergeists as spirits, but that the doings are the phenomena of undeveloped magicians, mostly youngsters, who have no awareness of their powers as their own or, in the cases of mischievous, or malicious, persecutions, are more or less consciously directed influences by enemies, or that, in this aspect, poltergeist disturbances are witchcraft under a new name. The change of name came about probably for two reasons: such a reaction against the atrocities of witchcraft trials that the existence of witches was sweepingly denied, so that continuing phenomena had to be called something else, and the endeavor by the spiritualists to take over witchcraft, as evidence of the existence of spirits of the departed. If witches there be, there must of course be some humorous witches. The trail of the joke crosses our accounts of the most deadly occurrences. In many accounts of poltergeist disturbances, the look is more of mischief than of hate for victims. The London Daily Mail, May 1, 1907, is responsible for what is coming now. An elderly woman, Madame Bilrati, had called upon the magistrate of the STE Marguerite district of Paris, and had told him that, at the risk of being thought a madwoman, she had a complaint to make against somebody unknown. She lived in a flat, in the Rue Montreuil, with her son and her brother. Every time she entered the flat, she was compelled by some unseen force to walk on her hands, with her legs in the air. The woman was detained by the magistrate, who sent a policeman to the address given. The policeman returned with Madame Bilrati's son, a clerk, aged 27. "What my mother has told you, is true," he said. "I do not pretend to explain it. I only know that when my mother, my uncle, and myself enter the flat, we are immediately impelled to walk on our hands." M. Paul Rice, aged 50, the third occupant of the flat, was sent for. "It is perfectly true," he said. "Every time I go in, I am irresistibly impelled to walk around on my hands." The concierge of the house was brought to the magistrate. "To tell the truth," he said, "I thought that my tenants had gone mad, but as soon as I entered the rooms occupied by them, I found myself on all fours, endeavoring to throw my feet in the air." The magistrate concluded that here was an unknown malady. He ordered that the apartments should be disinfected. There used to be a newspaper story of the traveling needle. People perhaps sat on needles, though they thought it more dignified to report that needles had entered their bodies by way of their elbows. Then, 5, 10, 20 years later, the needles came out by way of distant parts. We seldom hear of the traveling needle, nowadays, so I think that most, not all, of these old stories were newspaper yarns. I was interested in these stories, as told back in the 1880s and 90s, but never came upon one that seemed to me to be authentic, or to offer material much to speculate upon. I took suggestion from the method of black magic, of piercing, with a needle, the heart, or some other part, of an image of a proposed victim, and, according to beliefs, succeeded in affecting a corresponding part of a human being. An inquest, in the Shoreditch, London, Coroner's Court, November 14, 1919. A child, Rosina Newton, aged 13 months, had died. A needle was found in her heart. There was no skin wound to show where it had entered the body. It was the short life of this child that attracted my attention. The parents had no remembrance of any injury to her, such as that of a needle entering her body. It seems unlikely that anybody so intensely hated this infant as to concentrate upon a desire for her death, but I have stories that may indicate the doing of harm to children as vengeance upon parents. And in the annals of black magic often appears the sorcerer, who obtains something of the belongings, or of the body, of a victim, to secure a contact, or a sense of contact. Pairings of fingernails are recommended, but the procuring of a lock of the victim's hair is supposed to be most effective. There may be psychic hounds, who, from a belonging, pick up a scent, and then maintain, and operate along, a path, or a current, between themselves and their victims. In such terms, of harm, or of possession, may be understandable the hair clippers of our records. There is a strange story, in the Times of India, Bombay, August 30, 1928. A part of this story that does not seem so very strange to me is that three times a newborn infant of a Muslim woman, Abhangher, had been mysteriously and supernaturally snatched away from her. The strange part is that the police, though they had explained that these disappearances were only ordinary, or natural, kidnappings, had gone to the trouble of taking this woman, who for the fourth time was in a state of expectation, to the Victoria Zanana Hospital at Secunderabad, and that the hospital authorities had gone to the trouble and expense of assigning her to a special ward, where special nurses watched her, night and day. The fourth infant arrived, and this one, so surrounded by test conditions, did not mysteriously vanish, so it was supposed to be demonstrated that the three disappearances were ordinary kidnappings. The explanation that occurs to one is that, though it was not mentioned in the Times of India, there was probably a scare at Abhangher and that this demonstration was made to allay it. Just how, by ordinary, or natural, means, anybody could, time after time, without being seen, snatch a newborn infant from a woman, was not inquired into. All such demonstrations start with the implied assumption that there is not witchcraft, and then show that there is not witchcraft. That is, there is no consideration for the thought that a witch might exist and might fear to practice so publicly as in a hospital ward. The demonstration was that there was not witchcraft in a hospital ward, and that therefore there is not witchcraft. Many of our data are of most public, or daring, or defiant occurrences, but it is notable that they stop mostly, though not invariably, when public attention is aroused. Sometimes they stop, and then renew periodically. About the 1st of May, 1922, Pauline Picard, a Breton child, aged 12, disappeared from her home on a farm, near Brest, France. I take this account from various issues of the Journal des Débats, Paris, May and June, 1922. Upon May 26, a cyclist, passing Picard's farm, saw something in a field, not far from the road. He investigated. He came upon Pauline's naked and headless body. At the roadside were found her clothes. It was noted that they were neatly folded. The body was decomposed. Hands and feet, as well as head, were missing. This body, visible from the road, was found at a point half a mile from the Picard farmhouse. It seems most likely that, if it was seen by a passing cyclist, it could not long have been lying so conspicuous, but unseen, by members of the Picard family. Nevertheless, that it had so lain was the opinion that was accepted at the inquest. It was said that the child must have wandered from home, and, returning, must have died of exhaustion, and that the body had been defaced by rats and foxes. This story of the wandering child, dying of exhaustion, half a mile from her home, was given plausibility by the circumstances that once before Pauline had wandered far, and that she had been affected mentally. At least, she had disappeared, and had been found far away. Upon April 6, of this year 1922, Pauline disappeared. Several days later, a child was found wandering in the streets of Cherbourg. The Picards were notified, and, going to Cherbourg, identified this child as Pauline, who, however, did not recognize them, being in a state of lapsed consciousness, or amnesia. If Pauline Picard, aged 12, had made this journey afoot, or by means that are called natural, between a farm near Brest and Cherbourg, in a state of amnesia, which it seems would somewhere be noted, but had not been reported, she had gone, unreported, a distance by land of about 230 miles. Twice Pauline Picard disappeared. The first disappearance was not an ordinary runaway, or was not an ordinary kidnapping, because something had profoundly affected this child mentally. I have notes upon more than a few cases of persons who have appeared, as if they had been occultly transported, or at any rate have appeared in places so far from their homes that they were untraceable, and were amnesiacs. An expression for which I should like to find material is that, three times, in distant parts of India, wolf children were reported, after the times of disappearance of the infants of Bhonghur. The official explanation of the second disappearance and the death of Pauline Picard bears the marks of dictation by taboo. If the body of this child had been also otherwise mutilated, the explanation of defacement by rats and foxes would be more nearly convincing, but something, or somebody, had, as if to prevent identification, removed, without other mutilations, hands and feet and head, and also, contradictorily, had placed the body in a conspicuous position, as if planning to have it found. The verdict at the inquest required belief that this decomposed body had lain, conspicuous, but unseen, for several weeks, in this field. There is a small particular that adds to the improbability. It seems that the clothes, also conspicuous by the roadside, had not been lying there, for several weeks, subject to the disturbing effects of rains and wind. They were neatly folded. It is as if somebody had removed head, hands, and feet from this body, and had stripped the clothes from it, so that it could not be identified, and had placed the clothes nearby, so that it could be identified. A field, the dismembered body of a child, a farmhouse nearby. But I can pick up no knowledge of relations with environment. Friendly neighbors or a neighbor with a grudge all around is vacancy. A case that was called unparalleled was told of, in the New York newspapers, April 30, 1931. Here, too, the surroundings are blankness, in the usual way the story was told, as an unrelated thing. Perhaps, somewhere nearby, brooding over a crystal globe, or some other concentration device, was the origin of a series of misfortunes.